Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Marine Mammals Edition. Today our featured guest is Hofstra University Professor of Law Julian Koo, discussing Winter v. Natural Resources Defense Council, heard an oral argument on Wednesday, October 8th. Thanks for tuning in. In this case, affectionately known as the Save the Whales case, the Supreme Court deals with a balance between national defense and protecting the environment. The case arises from the use of mid-frequency active sonar during United States Navy submarine training exercises. Acknowledging that such sonar, quote, may affect both the physiology and behavior of marine mammals, the Navy issued a required environmental assessment under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. On claims brought by the Natural Resources Defense Council that the Navy was violating both NEPA and the Coastal Zones Management Act, a federal district court issued a preliminary injunction restricting the Navy's use of the sonar. Neither the district court nor the circuit court was willing to vacate the injunction based on the Navy's argument that it had coordinated alternative arrangements with the Council on Environmental Quality due to, quote, emergency circumstances. The Supreme Court now considers whether the grant of injunctive relief was proper. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Koo.
Hi, this is Julian Koo. I'm professor of law at Hofstra Law School in New York, specializing in constitutional law and foreign relations law. And this is the Federalist Society podcast discussion of the Supreme Court's upcoming decision in Winters versus National Resources Defense Council. This case is about a dispute between the U.S. Navy and, well, essentially, dolphins and whales living off the coast of Southern California and northern Mexico. The court is reviewing lower court decisions, in particular a preliminary injunction that limits the Navy's use of mid-frequency active sonar, MFA sonar, during their training exercises in Pacific coastal waters. Now, at the outset, this decision sounds like, or the decision being reviewed in this case, sounds like one of those out there, ridiculous, easily reversed decisions by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, for which that circuit has become quite famous in certain legal circles. Yet, although my best guess is that the Navy will ultimately prevail here, this case is not an obvious slam dunk for the Navy. There are problems in the legal framework, the environmental legal framework, and its interaction with the Navy's needs to conduct military and training exercises that do need to be dealt here with here. Now, in my humble opinion, the legal framework does not clearly guarantee the President's ability to, either by through his own powers or through administrative agencies, to limit the effect of environmental statutes on military training activities or military activities in general. In this podcast, I'll start by reviewing the facts of this case and then the rather complex procedural history, the key arguments in this case as they were presented at the Supreme Court, and then my best guess as to the likely outcome or the facts. Okay, so this case concerns the Navy's use of what was called the Southern California Operating Area, SoCal, an area in the Pacific Ocean west of Southern California and northern Mexico, and their use of mid-frequency active sonar in these exercises. Prior to this case, the Navy had scheduled a series of up to 14 exercises in SoCal from February 2007 through January 2009. In fact, they're ongoing right now, to prepare naval strike groups for deployment in the Western Pacific and the Middle East. According to the Navy, the use of MFA sonar to detect submarines is an essential element of these exercises, which train thousands of military personnel in a strike group to operate as an integrated unit with simultaneous air, surface, and undersea warfare. All right, so the basic bottom line is the Navy doesn't actually do these exercises anywhere else. This is the only area that they can conduct these very large-scale exercises, and the Navy doesn't get to do much these days, so these exercises are very important for keeping up for training their employees. In other words, they don't engage in direct military activities very often. Now, at the time of the Supreme Court argument, the Navy completed 10 of the planned exercises, which are often the only opportunity sailors and Marines have to train in this environment. So, and the concern, technically, of course, we're at war, and the Navy has been arguing that this is an important way to train the Navy, especially in undersea warfare. All right. Now, let's talk about the procedural history. The Navy began the process of getting environmental clearance for its exercises back in 2006. It submitted a plan to the California Coastal Commission pursuant to a federal statute, the Coastal Zone Management Act of 1972, the CZMA, It got a 2-year exemption from the president under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which is the major statute protecting dolphins, whales, and other marine mammals. And also developed an assessment in compliance with the Endangered Species Act. And then finally it prepared an environmental assessment, which is, by the way, not the same as an environmental impact statement, pursuant to the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. The environmental assessment, which turns out to be a big part of this case, concluded that there would be no significant impact on the environment from the Navy's use of mid-frequency active sonar. Predictably, perhaps, because this type of litigation happens quite often, they were sued in March 2007 by the National Resources Defense Council, the NRDC. The district court issued a preliminary injunction against the Navy in August 2007, which the Ninth Circuit stayed and remanded for a variety of reasons. Eventually, the district court issued another preliminary injunction in January 2008. The key sort of limitations are, one, the Navy will cease sonar transmissions whenever a marine mammal is spotted within 2,200 yards or 1.25 miles of any sonar source. And two, it will reduce sonar power by 6 decibels whether or not a marine mammal is present whenever the Navy detects a significant surface ducting, an environmental condition characterized by a mixed layer of constant water temperature extending to at least 100 feet below. Now, as I understand this, the second requirement is particularly troublesome, as in Chief of Naval Operations said in his affidavit, because that this surface ducting where mammals hide or might be and you can't hear them is also where other enemy submarines might hide and you can't hear them. And so the Navy, that's one of the reasons why the Navy needs active sonar, to try to find people in those surface ducts. In any event, the Chief of Naval Operations submitted an affidavit saying this would make these restrictions, these two in particular, would unacceptably risk naval training, the timely deployment of strike groups, and national security. So, after the preliminary injunction was issued, President Bush intervened. First, he exercised his express authority under the CZMA to exempt a federal activity if he finds it to be in the paramount interest of the United States. And he did. This part of his order is not being challenged. Now, here's the part where it gets complicated. Contemporaneous with the President's action, the Council on Environmental Quality exercised its authority under federal regulations to authorize alternative arrangements for NEPA compliance in, quote, emergency circumstances. And so the Council of Environmental Quality is a administrative agency which is authorized under the NEPA to, well, at least according to the theory, to issue, to allow agencies to adopt alternate arrangements. The Navy did adopt these alternative arrangements, which lifted these what they think are onerous requirements, and so they went ahead with exercises. But before they did that, they went back to the district court, and the court issued the same preliminary injunction, finding that the Council of Environmental Quality ruling was unauthorized because, according to the district court, there were no emergency circumstances that required alternative arrangements. And this is affirmed by the Ninth Circuit and the Navy appeal. All right, so let's just get down to it, the bottom line here. So the Navy argued is two basic arguments. One, the lower courts failed to defer to the CEQs, that's the Council of Environmental Quality, their assessment that there are, in fact, emergency circumstances, i.e. wartime, that justifies the Navy's adoption of alternative arrangements for fulfilling its NEPA obligations. By the way, I should backtrack. The NEPA obligations the Navy needs to do is that they were supposed to conduct a full environmental impact statement as opposed to just an environmental assessment. NEPA is a purely procedural statute, which is what's interesting about this case, because even if the NRDC wins, all that happens is that the Navy has to conduct an environmental assessment. There's no remedy under the statute to actually stop the Navy. But in any event, the Navy is arguing that they should have the CEQ's assessment of an emergency should permit them to avoid the environmental impact statement requirement. And so they take issue with the lower court's refusal to see an emergency. The district court basically argued there's no emergency. The Navy can conduct its exercises under these limitations. And so there's basic disagreement there as to whether or not there's an emergency circumstance here. Second, the Navy argues there's no real likelihood of irreparable injury. They argue the record doesn't show there is actually any serious danger to marine mammals. And any balancing of hardships, which is another requirement of the preliminary injunction, for issue of preliminary injunction, the harm is really in favor of the Navy, where they can't, this is a substantial impact on the ability to conduct exercises and preserve national security. Now, let me sort of speed up my discussion here a little bit. What's interesting is that the NRDC at the Supreme Court level changed the focus of their arguments and really focused on almost what's a new argument, which is they didn't really argue too much about whether or not there was an emergency. What they did was they argued the legitimacy and authority of the CEQ order itself, the Council on Environmental Quality order, that has been based, that said there was emergency circumstances and that alternative arrangements were appropriate. They offered what's called the Habern's case argument, claiming that the CEQ order violates Article 3 by setting an executive agency above the courts, giving it the ability to reverse the judgment of a federal court. Essentially, they're saying, look, the agency intervened here to reverse a specific judgment, and that's essentially meaning that the agency has become a court. They could not, under any circumstances, according to NRDC, have overruled this court's factual finding the Navy could, in fact, train and certify its groups under the challenge mitigation mechanisms. Now, I don't think this is a very strong argument, although this is really where the NRDC seems to have put all its chips down. It's not a winner here, I don't think, anyways. The Navy pointed out in their reply brief, the CEQ is not reversing, they're not sitting as a court reversing district court's order. What they did was, the court issued its preliminary injunction. The CEQ said this constitutes an emergency circumstance because the Navy cannot at this point conduct their exercises. They then focused on the question of what could there be alternative arrangements and what are those arrangements. In other words, the district court PI was a factual event. Emergency occurs, the Navy can't do their exercises. And then the CEQ said, well, if this is an emergency, we rule there's an emergency and that there's an alternative mechanism under these regulations. The Navy should be able to do it under these alternative mechanisms. So that's the Navy's point. And this seems somewhat persuasive, although I can see that there is something of an argument here that the CEQ is essentially acting to reverse the district court. Although they're not technically reversing the district court's factual findings, the Navy can in fact conduct exercises. They're just saying that the Navy's that these are now emergency circumstances which justify alternative arrangements. That does seem to be within their authority under the statute. Okay. There are other arguments floating around here which didn't seem to get a lot of attention in either the briefs or the oral argument. The argument that in fact the plaintiffs have been standing, which is an interesting problem because injury to the environment is usually not enough to sustain standing, at least in a PI event. And then finally, there's also the issue at the end of the day that if the district court, ignoring the Habern's argument, doesn't the president's judgment and the CEQ's judgment on the need for, and the Navy's judgment on, they need these sorts of abilities, that these limitations essentially undermine their ability to protect national security using sonar, you know, shouldn't there be deference to the military's judgment on these issues? It doesn't appear the district court gave much deference at all in their factual finding. All right. So let me just sort of finish up here. Look, at oral argument, the court didn't really focus much on the big Habern's case issue. They spent a lot of time arguing about, except that they argued or asking questions about, why does the Navy just file an environmental impact statement and get this over with, as they're preparing anyways to do. And the Navy argued, I think, or the Solicitor General argued, look, we're trying to create a framework that will work better in the future so that we won't have these problems in the future, which seems like they persuaded many of the justices. At least two justices, interestingly, Justice Alito and Justice Breyer, took issue with the district court's factual determination, which is what I was just mentioning, which is that there was no need for the Navy to be able to, say, use sonar with less than 2,200 yards and surface ducting and all the other things the Navy said. Breyer said, look, there's no answer to the Navy's claim on this point, that the PI would prevent effective training to track enemy submarines, diesel-electric submarines from China or North Korea. The Navy said, we can't train to detect them under these limitations. And the NRDC lawyer was really unable, basically said, look, you know, this doesn't happen very often. But the Breyer said, look, you know, he doesn't see there's any argument that why the Navy is not getting any deference on this point. They don't even have a real persuasive factual reason as to why there's no problem here, in other words. And Breyer also basically argues that, look, there's no strong evidence that there's no emergency. Navy, the district court really didn't analyze that question effectively because they didn't give any deference to the Navy's unrebutted claims that they can't conduct their training under these limitations. So, at least based on the oral argument, Justice Breyer, it's hard to hear what the other justices didn't really raise any hard questions exactly. Justice Breyer in particular seems, I think, put his finger on a key point here, which is, yeah, you know, if the Navy says that they can't conduct these exercises, this is a wartime situation, why doesn't this court give them more deference? On what basis can this court second-guess that judgment? They could second-guess it, but they didn't, as Breyer would argue, they didn't provide any facts here that would overcome what he suggests might be even a presumption the Navy is correct here in their claim. All right, so what's my prediction? It's always dicey to predict based on the questions, but one can easily imagine a 6-3 decision reversing the district court's preliminary injunction with Kennedy and Breyer joining Scalia, Thomas, Roberts, and Alito. But who knows? I mean, you could get a broader majority, and I think it's quite likely that they will avoid the Habermas case issue, at least they won't focus on it, and that they'll focus on the district court's decision here and their factual finding that the Navy did not need to conduct these sorts of long-range sonar exercises. I think that's a likely result, is a good result. I wonder if they will address the broader issues and clarify any of the problems in the framework, as I see it, environmental law governing military exercises here. In any event, so like with law Supreme Court decisions, we might see a very interesting issue raised, and then the court kind of sidesteps it, which is entirely possible here, which might be the prudent thing to do here. So what it's worth, that's my summary of Winters versus Natural Resources Defense Council. And thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.